G'day everybody, it's Brett Mitchell here. Welcome to the latest edition of Infection Control Matters. I'm joined with Phil. G'day Phil. And I can't hear you, Phil.
G'day Brett, good to see you again.
You too. Actually, we should leave that in, that little can't hear you, Phil, because that's a routine, isn't it? Can't hear you, Phil. We've got our guest today is Dr. Brian Ford. And Brian is a fellow in microbial in bioinformatics at the University of Queensland in the Centre of Clinical Research. And so welcome, Brian, to Infection Control Matters.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks, Phil. I should say that I'm actually now with the Institute of Molecular Bioscience as well as Centre for Clinical Research.
Excellent. And that's still at University of Queensland?
It's still University of Queensland, yes.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, good. Thank you. Look, we wanted to chat to Brian about a paper and a larger program of work that you and others have been involved with. And the paper that sort of you might refer to a little bit, it's been recently published in Microbiology Society. And it's in relation to something I think you're calling HAI-Vis. Is that how, or have you, is that?
Yeah, we would say HIVIS.
HIVIS, yeah, excellent. Yeah. HIVIS, yeah. And it's a dashboard for visualizing and integrating healthcare associated genomic epidemiological data. And so, you know, I know you and the team have been working on genomics as it relates to infection prevention control for many years. Do you want to give us a little bit of background to this project, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, yeah, we've been working in this kind of infection control space for a long time. I think it probably started back in 2016 in Scott Beatsman's lab. I think it might have gone back to 2015 with an outbreak of Legionnaires' disease in one of the Brisbane hospitals. And from that point, we were very lucky enough to have a clinical microbiologist, Dr. Patrick Harris, come and spend some time in the lab as he was doing his PhD. Patrick was very, very interested along with us in looking to see how we could use genomics to help enhance and inform infection control practices in hospitals. I mean, at the time, and even now, I mean, standard infection control practices are, while they're reasonably fast and low cost, and they're kind of well established and accredited, they're kind of low resolution, right? We can get to species mm-hmm. level very, very easily, but going deeper than that is quite difficult. And even when we look at a species, we can break it down into lineages. And in terms of lineages, isolates or hospitals that are from different lineages, the same bacteria are unlikely to be related from a transmissions perspective. And even within lineages, there's a whole range of diversity within the lineages, depending on the lineages. And in most cases, isolates within different clusters within lineages are going to be unrelated from a transmissions perspective. Mm. So that species level cutoff is just really not good enough for informing infection control and really allowing proper targeting to where it's actually needed.
Yeah. And throughout this whole time, you're working really closely with the infection control teams at in some Brisbane hospitals too, aren't you?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So we would, when an outbreak was detected or after an outbreak had been resolved, we would hospitals would approach us, generally through Patrick Harris, who was with Pathology Queensland, and still is with Pathology Queensland at the time, and look either for some retrospective analysis on the outbreak to look at the relatedness of the organisms and some in silico genotyping, so AMR, so antimicrobial resistance, looking at resistance genes or mutations, and then looking at potential transmission routes during that outbreak. And that progressed then to applying genomics during outbreaks to either identify transmission where it's occurring between patients or actually rule out transmission where none has occurred, basically. Both equally is important in our perspective. I mean, for either allowing targeting of infection control to where it's needed and removing or unnecessary infection control responses where they're not required.
Yeah, and it's much more, as you say, so much more granular data and informative data to be able to make those decisions with accurate data and so whether we need to continue things or not. And so when you first started this out, there would have been a bit of a, presumably a bit of a time frame gap between receiving these types of samples and being able to provide these type of advice back to IPC teams about transmission pathways from genomics. How has that gone in terms of time frame from when you first started off to where you are now?
Yeah, look, I think when we first started off, as I said, most of the work we did was retrospective. So we were talking about a real deep analysis of genomic-based informed analysis of the outbreak. So more looking like a population genomic style paper, but more localized to that particular outbreak. And that could take weeks or months. So we could provide reports back over that period. But there was no necessity to provide data back in a timely manner because the outbreak had been resolved. When we swapped to actually using genomics as a potential intervention, or when I say intervention, I mean to enhance the infection control response, our goal was to provide data back as quickly as possible. Part of the problem here is, though, we don't, and no one at the time had a dedicated sequencing facility to process samples as they come in. So samples are sent away, as we all know, to be sequenced offsite. And then if you're sequencing, say, 100 samples, you can get it done pretty quickly. If you're sequencing 10, you're pretty much sitting in a queue waiting for that sample to be done. So we were bound by the time frames in which the sequencing could be done. Once the sequencing was returned, though, we could get reports out within 8 hours, so the same day, really.
And so that in recent times now, with this, what's it down to? What are you?
Oh, well, look, so from 2017 to 2021, we were involved in pretty much running the genomics and developing workflows and platforms. So for real-time prospective genomic surveillance within Queensland Health, part of that process was reporting and reporting in timely manners. Again, over the course of that project, we didn't have a dedicated facility for sequencing, but the pipeline we developed can process samples from raw data to report in 7 minutes per sample. So we can do like tens to hundreds in a few hours, which we'll never get that many basically for an outbreak, hopefully. But I mean, we can, like, for the standard samples to come through. And I think over the course of that project, we got it down to 10 days turnaround time. That whole pipeline and workflow has now been transferred to Pathology Queensland, where it was. It's recently been NAT accredited. And I think they're striving for that 7 day minimum turnaround time. So the same week, basically. So they've now got all the resources they require, and infrastructure is now all in-house. So they do all their own sequencing in-house. We still support and manage the pipeline for them while they need it. And so they run it, and so everything is done in-house, and the time frames are coming right down, basically. Yeah. So I think they're becoming competitive with the standard lab-based diagnostic approaches.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. I think that the biggest issue we've always had, though, was, I mean, as we all know, genomic information is really rich, but it's also quite complex. And it's just communicating that data back to individuals so that data is relevant. And then you're trying to communicate complex data to people who might not be as literate in genomics as say we are. And that is changing, definitely, for sure. But I think there's still, how do we get the right information to the right people, basically? And how do we make that information relevant and understandable so that it could be applied in the clinic?
It's all fascinating stuff. Thanks, Brian. Perhaps for context, I might just go back a few decades. So back to the 90s.
He likes to reminisce.
The facility. Well, it's just, this is evolution. This is just how far we've come. Working infection control in aged care facility, and it was clear that we were having a gastro outbreak. And to cut a long story short, I think with the outbreak lasted for something like 10 to 12 weeks, and it went across two different facilities, and I think there was around about 60 patients involved, residents involved, And about half as many staff, 30 staff or so, were involved as well. So it was a really beautiful outbreak to be involved in. But the reality was that, in our infection control office, we had a huge whiteboard where we actually got the texture and drew the map of every room and put the red dot with every patient who had gastro, black dots for those who had passed away, and green dots for those who hadn't had it. And that took hours or days and weeks to do. And then we physically mapped on the whiteboard every next case and who they'd been in contact with. And we took detailed case notes. We took samples when we could get them. I think in those days, electron microscopy might have taken about 10 days to get a result for Norwalk or norovirus at those times. And the only information you got was positive or negative, nothing more detailed than that. And so it was fascinating to it was a really good outbreak to get involved in and describe. At the end of it all, we sort of felt as though no matter what we did, it probably would have run its course anyhow. We probably maybe might have prevented a few residents and a few staff from getting it, but at the end of the day, we sort of felt like we were always so far behind the outbreak itself that no matter what we did, this is going to change that situation, isn't it? This is going to condense the time frames that we're dealing with, notifications, results, your ability to. I love the fact that you can map. Put in drawings of wards and layouts in there. And so that outbreak that I spoke to, I think happened around about 95, 96. So, 20 years down the track, we've come a long way, and this
How's your maths,
tool
Bill? 30 years.
30 years, sorry, 30 years. Well, I'm only 28, Brett, so I think that, had we had this tool in those days, I wonder how things would have gone.
Yeah, look, I don't think things have changed that much in those 30 odd years. Just look, only a couple of years ago, we have a great relationship with infection control teams basically across Brisbane, and they were still had the requirement of printouts of Excel sheets that they converted to Gantt charts basically of patients' stays and when they were identified as being infectious or having the outbreak organism. And these things could be meters long. And they would do all these by hand and annotate them all by hand. And just, yeah, I think interacting with some of the informatic systems that the hospitals use are still quite archaic. I think the one for patient bed movements is access through Telnet, which is we were surprised when we saw it. That's all I can say. So I mean, for us, it was about really. Oh, yeah, and it took weeks for someone to manually go through patient records, and I say weeks, so like days to go through records and manually draw this out and put it on a wall and have people sit down and look at it and cross-reference patient overlaps and stays. And for us, it was that this type of information is easily converted to something far more accessible when you digitalize it.
I was going to say, and this has led to this paper that we're,
Yeah,
as I
absolutely.
spoke about the high-vis visualization.
So it's we have all this information and nobody can access it easily. And that leads to delays, obviously. So as you talk about, so if you're trying to manually map out and draw where a patient was at a particular time and when they became infectious or when they carried the organism and who they were interacting with at that time, and you're doing this manually, by the time, as you said, you come to a conclusion, it's moved on. It's several steps ahead of you, basically. So you're always chasing the outbreak rather than actually jumping in front and trying to disrupt the transmission chain. And really, what we wanted to do is be able to take the genomics, which is high resolution, and combine that with the standard epidemiological data that's collected in by all infection prevention and control teams during outbreaks or during suspected transmission events in hospitals, and combine them together. And really pinpoint areas that we should be targeting so we can ignore those patients who we can categorically rule out as not being involved, look like they might be involved, but based on the genomics, they can't possibly be involved. And then look at where the transmissions are actually occurring and then go in and target those areas and isolate those patients or subject them to other infection control responses, such as very targeted cleaning or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. I love it. And so it's sort of that it's an interactive web-based visualization tool. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, exactly. So I guess, yeah, it's an interactive web-based visualization tool combining genomics and epidemiological data for management of healthcare-associated infections or suspected healthcare-associated infections.
And so you can look at the transmission networks, the time frames, and one of the things that I think I liked in the paper is as Phil alluded to as well, is that sort of map of a ward, be able to see how some of that works. So did you have to try and find that balance between enough genomic information, but not too much for people to go, this actually isn't, I can't understand or interpret that, but I need to be able to understand and interpret that for the purposes of what's happening in this outbreak scenario or from an epidemiological point of view. Is that where you worked with trying to get that balance right with teams?
Yeah, that was like I was working really, really deeply with our end users, which would be the ID physicians, clinicians, infection control teams, and the pathologists. And it's really, there's no point in us doing a huge amount of work and presenting all of this genomic information and it being absolutely useless. And I think there was that balance of that we'd do phylogenetic trees, we'd look at plasmids and whole genome comparisons, and really it's not what you want. It's is organism A related to organism B? And if so, were those patients in the same place at the same time, facilitate transmission, basically? And have there been previous cases identified within the last X days or months? And if so, how related were they? And were they in the same wards at the same time? Or where in the hospital were they located? And I think that's the information that they want. We all know clinicians, you guys are time poor, right? They don't have time to sit down and read lengthy reports that are pages and pages long, basically, very kind of descriptive and with a lot of unnecessary information. They really wanted to present something that in one page on a screen you could look at and look at how an outbreak is evolving over time and look at where those hotspots are for suspected transmission events. And that's the idea of including the map. And the map is, I think that's what makes it stand out from other epidemiological visualization tools. So we have an X-ray and a MicroReact, which are beautiful tools, are amazing, but they have that kind of larger macro geographic area. They're really looking at epidemics and kind of pandemics and provide a huge amount of information for that. But just looking at that local focused outbreak or transmission events, there's a really gap in the market for that. And that's what we wanted to target. So the idea of including a customizable map or a map that you can upload, and even now we've changed it, so you can upload a JPEG or a PNG image. So you can take an image, a photograph of a ward if you want it. You mean like a bird's eye view or just longitudinally down the ward and map every bed on that ward and give it an ID. And then with your import metadata sheet, sample sheet that you have that should be that be collected over time anyway, it will put whatever information, it'll annotate those pictures and maps for you, whatever that might be.
Is that done through some AI technology as well, or is that just
No, at this stage. No, I mean it's really working with available metadata. So the data that they'd have would be that we would get on a regular basis would be date of sample collection, ward of collection, and even the bed in that ward. And it's very easy to map that. And we might get led to patient stays as well. So we can start building up those kind of time frames of patient stays in wards. So we can look at how long a particular patient has been in a ward, when the isolate was collected from that patient, so when they became positive for the outbreak organism, any overlaps they have with other patients in that ward, and if those patients have become positive subsequently.
Brian, where do you see this? This could go anywhere with AI, couldn't it? I mean, could this go to a day-to-day real life situation where this has just been monitored 24 hours a day down the track? I mean, is that the potential for this sort of tool?
Yeah, look, I think so. That's what we would really, really love to see happen. At the moment, it's kind of works in a kind of BYOD, so bring your own data design. So you bring your metadata, you bring your SNP profiles, you bring whatever information you want, and you plug it all in to the browser. And it displays that information for you. The good thing about that is, the bad thing is that you have to do all the analysis yourself separately. The good thing is that all that data doesn't go off your machine. So even though we host the thing, it stays. So all the processing is done locally. So there's no transmission of sensitive clinical data offsite. You know, and so everything is done locally, basically on your own machine. Basically, so, which is really kind of nice, secure feature about it. You can also run it, download it, and install it locally. It's a bit more complicated to do that, but it can be done, and we'd be happy to help anyone to do that. Where I see it going, though, is integrating directly with patient records, so that information streams directly into HiViz. We have a pipeline, genomics pipeline, already integrated into Queensland Health. Data from that can stream off that pipeline into HiViz as well at the same time. And as you said, I could envision a large screen in an infection control team center, basically, where this information is just constantly popping up. I mean, and just having it allowing people to be able to query it. So I want to look at this ward on these dates, you mean, and between whatever, you mean, and having that information up and being able to look at a particular time point. So if you go, well, patient X is now in ward B, but he seems to have had this isolate before he came in, and once he arrived in, all these other patients, we want to see where he was previously, so we can trace that individual backwards in time to where they might have, so when they entered into the hospital, where they've been in that hospital, who they've interacted with. And that's how I see it. That's my vision of the future for it.
Queensland Health Hospitals are on a uniform IT platform, I think. So
Yes, it is.
you so it's not it wouldn't be a matter of having to configure HiViz for each different service. You
No.
could just do one which would cover all of Queensland Health
Yeah,
services.
exactly. Yeah, so it'd be easy. I think there might be some difficulty with in terms of like the actual patient movement data, which is on a different system, and I think that's very hospital specific. So it's all the data is in one central repository, but each hospital can access only its own, which is fair enough. But I don't think that's a barrier. I think it's just a little bit of tweaking, basically, to how things work. So limiting access to in particular sites to the data that's relevant to that site.
I was going to say, and just to emphasize your point that the data isn't actually being uploaded and stored anywhere
No,
else. So it's not going into a
never.
cloud, it's all staying on your local machine.
Yeah. I mean, we're very conscious about that. Obviously, when we have to have the appropriate ethics and patient health, patient record access, and all approves and everything. And even when we get the data, it's been de-identified. I mean, it can be re-identified, but only within Queensland Health. So yeah, so for us, it's just those crucial bits of information about times and locations, really.
And people can check this out themselves and look at the actual tool and download it, presumably. And that web address will stick on the Infection Control Matters website. But it's HiViz, HaiViz.forward with an E, lab.com. Would you be hoping that people uptake this and use it and look at it and might be able to use it in their own facility? And it's available free, is that right, Brian?
It's absolutely free. In the online version, there's some test data sets that are up there, so you can look at particular outbreaks. Some are from our own that we've characterized, and some are just from papers that have used genomics to look at outbreaks, and we've tried to replicate their results using HiViz to see if we could do the same thing or add some value in. And so I let people look at it, decide that for themselves. But I'd like to say, though, that it's not HiViz, so a healthcare associated infection visualization tool is where the acronym comes from. But we actually see value in this beyond the healthcare system. So even, to public health, so kind of in local areas, so spanning to maybe like suburbs or to Phil, you mentioned aged care facilities recently. So those large facilities that have residential facilities with lots of houses and apartments as well is a possibility, but also in industry applications. I think one of the benefits of that is the ability to upload photographs and or pictures and annotate those pictures. means one of the examples of the, two of the examples I'll give two. One would be in quality assurance in the food production, where you could upload a schematic or a map of a food production facility, like a machine or a conveyor system or whatever, and annotate swap sites that you're checking on that machine. So you know if you've identified organisms, you know where they are, you know what those organisms are, or even just annotating, being able to annotate or show clearly where you've checked. Basically. And the second one we look at is an area we're really interested in is in environmental reservoirs in the hospital. So that might be contributing to transmission. So part of that is water distribution systems. We also have a demo that we give people that shows about mapping that onto the water distribution network. So take away all the floors and things and just looking at the pipes and being able to map, annotate sampling sites on pipes and describe the organisms that were in that at those different points, basically. So we see
Fascinating.
lots of applications, basically.
It does make me wonder, had we had this tool during COVID and the hospital outbreaks that occurred at COVID, would there have been a realization of the airborne spread a bit earlier than what was to be? It's just a question, to ponder, but
Who knows? It was something we'd like to have done. I think we had thoughts about doing some work of COVID with genomics in the hospitals, not public health side in the hospitals, but I don't know, in Queensland there wasn't as there were really outbreaks in the hospitals didn't really occur to that level, you know? And I think it was just public health who did a great job, basically, everywhere. I think really just kind of owned that whole area as well anyway. So it was something we just stayed away from.
Don't have to go working on
Probably safe, yes.
that. Look, it's been great talking to you, Brian. I really appreciate your time and this fascinating project. And thanks for all your work in this area because it's going to make things easier for infection control professionals, but more importantly, improve patient safety, be more responsive to scenarios and put in place the most appropriate intervention in a more timely fashion down the track. So thanks to you and your team for your work in this area, and I hope it continues to progress over the next few years for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure.
Thanks,
And
Brian.
thanks, Phil, for joining for this podcast as well.
Ciao.
And that's it from us at Infection Control Matters. Until next time, we bid you farewell. Thanks again, Brian.
Thank you.